Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock Thursday evening. You are listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block with the absolute star of the show, Bobby Jean Bell, and our lowly little assistant host, Jim Christina. Here I am.
Oh, goodness.
I knew I had to do that for you. I mean, you're going to get a bunch of them during the year, so just... I have to tell you, I was out at the Booker, and I went out to have bar food and drinks last night because we didn't want to cook. And as we were sitting talking to a friend about my books and what I've written and stuff, I get a tap on my back, and it's one of the servers, and she says, "You have a fan." And I turn around, there's these two people sitting there, and they're elderly. And she goes, "I heard you said Still Waters. You wrote Still Waters?" I said, "Yeah, I did." And she goes, "I have a copy of that." She goes, "I love that book." She says, "It is so bloody." Okay, like it. So right now, I'm going to give a shout out to my new best friend, Mary Lou and Pierce Wetter.
Yay.
If you're listening, hi, folks. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall. The numbers here for the studio are 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Bobby.
Jim.
Remind us what's going on next week.
Oh, you mean besides that it's my birthday?
Well, I don't know. Facebook didn't tell me that yet. Told me Jim's.
Oh, next week, let's see, Thursday the 27th, my husband Jim and I will be hosting our fourth Thursday of the month concert. The SCVTV presents the Out West Concert Series, an evening with Dave Stamey, and it is totally, totally, totally sold out.
That's what you were saying last week.
There is not one ticket to be had, and we probably now have turned 30 or 35 people away.
Frankly. Really?
Yes, yes.
Good for you.
Well, Dave's just a phenomenal Western music performer, and he has a really strong fan base, and he doesn't play the area all that often. Mm-hmm. So we're just thrilled. This is the first time we've been able to host him, and we've been looking forward to this for a really long time.
This is one you said you've been trying? Yeah.
Yes.
This is the first time he's been able to get in
That we've been able to figure a date that worked for him.
That's awesome.
And also, we're very excited. And it also is Out West's sixth anniversary.
Woo, woo.
6 years ago, on that same date, we had our big grand opening when we first opened our store in Old Town Newhall. So lots of reasons to celebrate.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, Russ and I are lucky because next week we get to interview the horse sluts.
You are going to have so much fun.
I know. I'm really looking forward to this.
With Ken Dacey and Penny, and if they're listening or if they catch this on podcast, I'm so sorry I'm not going to be with you gals, but you are going to have so much fun.
And ladies, if you are listening or you're going to listen to the podcast later on, we're going to have a ball.
You're going to have a ball.
I, for the life of me, I don't know how the hell they ever came up with the title of Horse Sluts.
They will tell you.
I would have gone with Horse Trollops.
Well, a good question. There's question number one.
There it is.
So make sure if you're listening, you come on back next week to hear the answer to that question.
All righty then. Well, let's find out a little bit about who's our guest this evening, Bobby.
Sure. And this is going to be a really fun evening, and we're being joined from Florida. Calling us tonight from his home in Florida is science fiction author Todd W. Embry. And two books of his first trilogy have been published, Revenge from Mars, which I couldn't put down, and Alien Manifesto. And the third book, Earth's Mirror, is soon to be published. Please welcome, calling in to the Writer's Block, Todd Embry.
Oh, crap.
That's right.
There we go.
Live radio.
Wrong button.
We're live.
Hey, Todd, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All righty. Welcome to the Writer's Block.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you're more than welcome. You know, we were talking actually a couple weeks ago about how well our show is doing and how many people are managing to find it. And you managed to find us. How did you find us?
Actually, my editor in charge of the publisher that I work for is in England, and she sent me your information.
Really?
Wow, that is so cool.
Sure enough.
It is very cool. We got Bobby's husband over here giving us two thumbs up.
We like that.
We know? Do. We like to. We like England.
That. Yeah, England. That's so cool.
That's huge.
That's huge.
That is absolutely huge. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and don't hold anything back.
Well, I've been married for 21 years next month to my wife, Linda. We have one daughter. She's 32. And we run a flower shop together. I went to culinary school for a switch. And in that time period, I met a professor there called Professor Wolfson. And we did an in-class assignment. And I finished mine in, like, I don't know, 20 minutes. And all the others were just standing around scratching their head like, you know, what do we do next? And he looked at my work, and he looked at me, and he looked at my work, and he said, so how many books have you written? And I thought to myself, I'm not going to write any books. I'm going to be a chef. Well, it turns out that I'm a better book writer than I am a chef. So that's how I got started.
It happens, Todd.
But I bet you're still a great cook, though. Do you do all the cooking at home?
I am. I just it's the alpha personalities in the kitchen that we don't get along. I have two speeds, slow and slower. And when you get on me about something, I downshift.
Yeah, I can understand that. I understand that.
You know, my dad used to have a phrase about that. He used to say, "He's so slow, he's backing up."
Yeah, that would be me backing up. No doubt. Yeah.
Todd. I've got a couple of questions here, and these questions actually are specific to the book Revenge from Mars.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about Earth as it exists in the beginning of this book, or not necessarily the very beginning, but you know what I mean, the premise of the book.
Yes, right, the main character.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Earth.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. Tell us a little bit about Earth.
All right, Earth, it's set in the year 2054, right around that time period, and the oceans have collapsed. And the only place to grow food is under dome because the air and the earth is so polluted that nothing will grow. And the world is controlled by one person. His name is the Supreme Leader Johnson. And he started out as a revival preacher for the super churches in the North American continent. And he worked his way up to the leader of the North American coalition. And he made peace with the Muslims because the world was divided into two camps, Muslim and Christian. There was nothing in between. They had Europe and Africa and all that, and we had the American continent. So they made peace. They cobbled together a religion they could both live with, and he became the religious leader and the political leader of Earth. And once that happened, all scientific knowledge was forbidden. The only kind of weaponry that was allowed was for that to control the crowds and to enforce the church law. And the earth was very, very close to actually extinguishing mankind, mm-hmm. because we had poisoned ourselves to death. And in desperation, the Supreme Leader reached out to Mars for raw materials, you know, iron ore, that sort of thing, to keep the Earth running because there wasn't anything left on Earth. And at that point is when the main character decides to migrate to Mars. When he gets to Mars, he wanders the Martian desert for many number of years looking for what the lie that the government had put forth to get people to immigrate to Mars. And that lie was the lost city of Mars, you know, where there's untold riches, you know, just waiting for someone to pick them up and all that sort of thing. And it was like the gold rush in 1949. Everybody just kind of flocked to Mars to get away from the festering boil the Earth had become and to get out from underneath the religious doctrine. But the problem with it is there's only one company in the world, and they own Mars, and there's no church on Mars. It's just you're there, and the only thing you own is yourself. You don't own your own clothes you work with, the air you breathe, food you eat, all supplied by the company. And the only way to get out of that loop is to buy your own, what I call a crawler, and a crawler is kind of like an exploration vehicle for Mars, and do private prospecting for minerals and that sort of thing. And that's what the main character does when he stumbles across things he shouldn't have.
Yes.
And they try and kill him for that, and he exacts his revenge at the end.
Yes. You know, it's a gripping story, and yet it feels very today in many ways. Now, when you talked about the crawler, tell us about Sally. Who's Sally?
Sally. Yeah, she was fun to write. She's a bit of a smartass, and she's actually a self-aware machine, but she's not really, because she plays a key part in the ending that is completely unexpected.
Yeah, you have a lot of twists and turns, and you're going along and you're thinking that you know what's going to happen, and you throw us something that I think you call a Crazy Ivan.
We have a call.
Crazy Ivan, yes, I do. I kind of picked up that name from The Hunt from Red October, and the scene particularly where they're about to confront the Russians, and all of a sudden he says, Crazy Ivan, and he makes a direct left turn to the left.
Got it.
Or to port.
Got it.
Yes. Hey, Todd, we have a caller for you.
Yeah, we have a caller on the
cool.
line.
All right.
I'm tough. Hi, this is the writer's block. Who am I speaking to?
Well, I've got writer's block so bad I can't even start my book.
Well, I usually get at least halfway through them before I get writer's block.
Oh, that's good.
Who is this?
I got you to laugh, Jim.
Oh, you're Mark. That's my best man.
Oh, well, welcome to the writer's block.
It's Mark Mattias.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Say
ma'am.
Hello to Todd Embry.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
I just had the call.
Huh? Who told you to call?
No, I saw your the thing on Facebook, so I said I better call.
Well,
because I've actually tried to start a book and I've got writer's block.
Well. That's what happens.
I can't even get it down on paper. I put it on a tape, but not paper.
Well, that's what happens.
So I'll have one of those. I'll have one of those books that's for blind guys.
Oh my God!
Hey, Todd. Well, we have you on the phone. How do you handle writer's block? Do you have any great advice for Mark?
Well, I actually have two kinds of writer's block. One of them is where there's ideas percolating in my head, and I physically can't write anything because the ideas in my head have not coalesced into a story. And the other kind I have is caused by just day-to-day stress, you know, aggravation, that sort of thing. And the only way to get rid of it for me, well, there's two ways, actually. One of them is to sit in my favorite place, which is on my back porch, and watch a Florida thunderstorm. That always works for me. Or I start to write in my journal, and it doesn't matter what you write as long as you're writing it down, and pretty soon I'm back into writing my story. And that's the only thing I know that works for me.
There you go, Mark.
Okay, well, I do have journals. I've got probably 20 journals of when we lived at the beach.
Well, don't do
that. Every day I wrote in there, but it was basically about surfing.
Uh-huh.
And mm-hmm. some everyday stuff. And then when I got hooked up with all the shadow riders, it went to hell in a handbag.
Well, you have to know the story of the shadow riders.
Sometimes when you write in your journal, you find what the problem is that's causing the writer block. It could be anything. It could be an argument with a customer, or an argument with the wife, or a family member, or anything like that. Or it could be an important appointment coming up, like a doctor's appointment or something that you're not really looking forward to. That'll do it sometimes, too.
Yeah, when you're a senior citizen, medical reasons or medical things, doctor appointments aren't any fun.
Hey, Mark.
No, and they seem to come with increasing frequency, even.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
That
Mark.
They do.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. Well, at least I'm retired.
Well, there you go. I'm not, so get off thy phone.
I don't have to work.
Listen to the rest of the show, bud.
All right. I just had to, call you.
Okay, my best to Deb.
You take care.
Okay,
thanks for
bye-bye.
Calling.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for calling.
Oh. We got you?
Do we still have Todd?
Todd, we got you?
Oh, I hung up on him, too.
Uh-oh. Can you give him a call back?
I just did.
Okay.
Wow.
I was talking to dead air there for a second.
It is live radio.
I must have fat fingers tonight for some reason. I can't. I don't know.
Did you have a question, Jim?
I have so many here. It's really hard.
I know.
It's hard
too.
To get into. Okay, Todd.
Well, I'll do my best to answer them.
Here's a wizard for you. What do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun?
Yeah.
Well, I used to race cars.
Yeah.
But that takes an enormous amount of money, which I no longer have. I like to go hiking into very wild places, mm-hmm. Everglades Swamp, Corbett Swamp, places like that that you can't. It's an hour in, an hour out on foot, you know, at least yeah. that. And the other thing I do for fun is spend time with my family.
Okay.
And that's about it. I guess I'm kind of a boring kind of guy, I guess.
No, I don't think so. I enjoyed reading your Facebook posts, and your daughter was just recently married. And
oh, yes, yeah. Yes, about 5 or 6 months ago, yes.
Yeah, and you got to spend some time away, I guess probably riding, 3 weeks or so. Were you in Kentucky?
Oh, yes, I was in Kentucky. My family has lived in Kentucky since just after the Revolutionary War. We purchased a property from the Choctaw Indians, and it's been our family ever since. And my uncle, who lives in California, actually in Sacramento, he comes home once a year to spend a couple of weeks with the family, and, mm-hmm. and then I go up there to cook for him, and when I'm not cooking, I'm writing. And then I got a lot done this year. I finished three short stories and a couple of poems.
That was going to be a question I was just going to ask you.
That
was good. You write novels. You write short stories.
Uh-huh. I write short stories, too, and I write poetry, yes.
Yeah, you ever considered prose or poetry? Duh.
Yeah. I do,
now
yeah.
you've answered all of the above, so never mind.
That's
a non-question.
Now, do you write with pen and paper? Do you write on an old-fashioned typewriter, on a laptop? How do you capture your writing?
It depends. The best place for me to write is on my back porch when it's nice and cool and the frogs are singing and the crickets are hollering and whatever. And
the skeeters are
buzzing. Then I write on paper and pen and paper. I do it traditionally, you know, that way sort of thing. And then after I get done with that, then I put it on the laptop. And that's also where I write my storylines, too, for my novels. I pin out what I want the next scene or two to happen, and then I go back to the computer, and the voices kind of take over, and it fills itself in.
Well, I know.
And when I say voices, I mean characters, yeah.
Yeah, and I know that you do rely a little bit on some input from the muse. Can you?
Yes, I do.
Can
my
you
muse,
tell
yes.
Me
I have several
yes.
muses, actually. There's. In my second book, Alien Manifesto, there are several characters that are feline and several characters that are canine, and I used my dog Hobo as the inspiration for, not as an inspiration, but kind of as a guideline to developing one of the canine characters, and he passed away, so then my dog Ivy that I have, I've used her too, but she's female, so it kind of makes a different character, and we have cats too. And in Alien Manifesto, one of the things that's in there is what's called a stealth master, and that's like a feline version of a ninja sort of thing. And that's when I watch them when they play and fight, and then they give me ideas, and then I turn into two words.
Yeah, that's it was intriguing that they came up with the canine master and the feline master. And mm-hmm. they're like, mm-hmm. like these super ninja dudes.
Yeah, that's it.
And that poor ex-SEAL couldn't even keep up with them.
What's that? I'm sorry.
The ex-SEAL couldn't keep up with them, Thomas.
No,
Scott.
No, not yet. Well, he once he got his enhancements done, he had no problem. He had his eyes replaced with an implant and his hearing, and he got 25 pounds of muscle. At the same time, they work out, five or 6 hours a day, every day, every 6 or 8 hours they work out until they're on a mission, and they usually do it in enhanced gravity, so they're probably as buff as you can get.
Can I ask you something, Todd?
Sure, go ahead.
How many drugs do you have to take to get this kind of scenario going?
Well, actually, you know, I have one of those imaginations that has gotten me into trouble since I was 6 years old.
Okay, then.
When I was in second grade, I had convinced my teacher that I had a pet leopard living in my treehouse. Well, that was fine and dandy, but when she called my mom to ask me to bring the leopard to show and tell the next day, that kind of got me in a little bit of trouble.
I would imagine.
And one of the scenes in Alien Manifesto comes from, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and the scene where in Empire Strikes Back, when Luke crashes into the Dagobah swamp,
mm-hmm.
brought about the actual villain in Alien Manifesto. My thought was, what would an intelligent race that knew nothing of space flight think of a traveler who crash landed on their planet, and what would happen after that?
That's true, huh?
And that's where the villain came up from.
Do you?
But as for your drugs, well, you know,
you do live in Florida.
I enjoy a little this, a little that, but more this than that. So,
do you use an outline historically, or are you one of those?
By the seat of pants writer? Actually, I do both. The outline
writing.
I do. However, sometimes my muse takes over, and that goes out the window. So it, you know, it's. Sometimes it wastes time. Sometimes it gets right down to the letter.
Uh-huh. Because I personally don't use outlines. The stuff just kind of falls
out. Yeah, I didn't at first either, but I found myself repeating what I said before
uh-huh.
in a different way.
Uh-huh.
Does that make any sense? So I started using an outline, and I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. What are your pet peeves? I mean, all of us writers have pet peeves. What are yours? And what are your rituals?
I hate to be interrupted when I'm writing. I have ADHD and dyslexia and bipolar. So when I concentrate on something, I get zoned in. It's really hard for me to do that, and it's really easy to break that concentration, and then I can't get back into it.
Wow, we got the hat trick going.
Well,
yes.
Now on Facebook, you'll often comment that it appears that you write on Tuesday nights, and I'm assuming you.
Yeah, that's because my wife goes to visit her father in Okeechobee, which is about 30 miles away, and that gives me an evening without interruption, without the phone, without the internet, because I don't have internet at home, without the TV, and I get a lot of work done. I've been known to write 2,300 to 2,500 words on a Tuesday night. I finished Alien Manifesto on a Tuesday night. Revenge from Mars, they hadn't started yet, but it actually started out with her bowling on Tuesdays. That's just where it's at right now.
Yeah, yeah. Very disciplined, I would say. You must be very disciplined.
Well, that discipline does not. Well, I take advantage of the situation,
yeah,
yes, but
yeah.
Discipline, probably not.
Now, can I ask a question, Jim?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, we've had, you know, several authors on the show before, and it's always fun to get into a territory that no one else has really shared yet. And I understand that a couple of your books were pirated.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell us?
TZAR Entertainment Group. They're the bane of my existence online. What started it was one of the author. I was in a publisher that I'm not with anymore because, and I'll explain why. Their business model was to promote over Facebook and Twitter only, and with an occasional thunderclap. I don't know if you know what thunderclap is or not, but it's
no.
And that's all I did for 2 years. And then one day I did a search on, just out of the lark, you know, some people say, oh, you know, you got to Google your own name sometimes. So I did. And I found 3 or 4 sites for the PDF copy of my book.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't giving me any revenue. And one of them had 615 sales on it. And so I, of course, called them up and screamed and yelled and hollered and threatened to go to the FBI and, you know, all the typical stuff that you do. And they took it down. And then it appeared on another site from the same company, and then another one, and then another one. Every time I call and take it down, and it pops up on another site. In the meantime, my real sales that I've been advertising for have been, you know, less than 50 copies.
Oh, that's
gotta suck.
So,
I don't know where they got the copy from. I have my suspicions, but I can't really say because
right.
I don't know for sure.
Right.
But you know, and I get it. You know, all they have to do is buy an ebook copy for $1.99
right.
and break the code, and then they make, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 off that $1.99.
Yeah.
That's astounding.
And do you? Yeah, it sucks too. Yeah.
In this process, have you learned any kind of any advice? There's probably nothing anyone can really do to protect themselves from that. Authors.
Actually, it's not really, no, but it's kind of a form of flattery, too, think about it. I get the new generation that everything's digital and they don't really, they can get it for free, they think it's okay because it's on the Internet. Yeah, I get that. It's unfortunate, but it is a compliment because, if I had sold 615 books on Amazon, I'd be in the top 1,000.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah. So that's a huge compliment, but it's kind of a sting to it, as both my cars have 150,000 miles or more on it, and my house is $80,000 underwater in the mortgage. It's rather difficult to justify them stealing from me.
I totally get that, and I really am somebody that believes that authors and artists and musicians and all creative people need to be properly compensated for what they do. I just really believe that.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, me too. I believe that too.
We're going to take a quick break.
And the sad part is I've been on the other side of the fence before. I used to think it was cool to download music and whatnot. And now, of course, I have a totally different perspective on it, and I don't do that anymore. It's just wrong.
Yeah,
it is.
It is.
It's just wrong.
Yeah. It is. We're going to take a real quick break. We'll be back in a few, and we're going to give you some music. Okay, we are back. If you're just joining us, this is LA Talk Radio, The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, and sitting across from Bobby Jean Bell and her husband Jim over here. Finally, we get him to put some headphones on. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Simi Valley and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. And our number here, if you want to talk to Todd, is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Todd, you with us?
I am here, yes, sir.
All righty. I have a question for you about publishers and rewrites, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
What kind of a say do you have in rewrites, cover design? How much latitude do you have when the collective content of the book is unassembled by the editors and proofreaders?
Well, that depends on what your publisher will allow. The first publisher I was with demanded that they supply their own cover art and that they do their own editing, and what they editing did stuck. I didn't have much word. I could say yes or no, and that's all I could say.
Mm.
And my current publisher, they are all fans of mine, actually. And so when I say, I don't want that to go, I want it to go this way, they're like, okay, no problem. And when they say, you can't string these two words together like that, and I'm like, okay, no problem, I say. And I also provide all of my own cover. I have a spray paint artist who did the cover from Revenge from Mars, and he also did the cover for Earth's Mirror. The cover for Revenge from Mars was done by my nephew, believe it or not, who's
mm-hmm.
16 years old.
Mm-hmm. And along that same vein, go ahead.
I said, as for a rewrite, that's completely up to me with the company I'm with. It's, if I want to do it, they'll tell me, well, we think it needs a rewrite, and then I'll say, okay, yes or no, and that's just the way it works.
Okay.
And who is your publisher now?
My current publisher is with Crimson Cloak Publishing.
And they're
England? They're kind of a new company. We've only got about 15 or 20 writers. We've got about 10 books out, and we've only been working about a year now.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of like being on the new because it's everybody's excited about doing it, and there's no jockeying for position, no backstabbing, that sort of thing. The only thing everybody wants is to get their books out and to help anybody else that already has their books out. And it's a really great group to work with.
You, on your Alien Manifesto, your original working title was The Job.
It was, yes. And the reason is because in the opening sequence is the ex-Navy SEAL meets an alien who offers him a job, and that's why I was going to call it The Job. But my publisher said, you know, I like this title from the short story. The first chapter was titled Alien Manifesto. The second title was titled Alien Manifesto. She said, I like this title better. Why don't we switch the title to Alien Manifesto and then do a different thing for the first two chapters? And I said, okay, sounds good.
That's the alien with the laughing tentacles?
Yes, it is. Yes, that's Snarf, yes. He's quite a rascal. He's more of a pleasure-seeking, multi-billionaire kind of person at first. But he does have an agenda, and he does have the best interests of people at heart, despite the fact that his planet was destroyed by the Galactic Federation, by the Galactic Coalition, during the First One War, because they thought they were collaborating. And that's why he's so wealthy, because his planet was destroyed and there's only four or five of his species that were off planet at the time, and he inherited all the wealth of that planet.
Uh-huh.
Now, in Revenge from Mars, there's a bar that our star
Henry
Thomas,
Prospector's Reward.
Yes,
yeah.
Prospector's Reward. And you know, I don't read a lot of science fiction, and I don't go to a lot of science fiction films, but I do know Star Wars, and so anytime there's a bar in a science fiction book, I immediately think about one of my favorite scenes from the original Star Wars in that bar.
Oh, yeah.
That's my wife's favorite thing, where they're playing the little flute
they're
thing.
They're playing right. That jazz.
Her favorite part.
Oh,
she always
God.
Goes, doot, 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 and when they start playing.
So I have to say that every time you took us to Prospector's Reward, I was in the bar in Star Wars with your characters.
Well, I won't say it. I will say that Star Wars has been a huge influence on my writing, along with Robert Heinlein and Alan Dean Foster and Orson Scott Card and you know, a couple of others. And I just draw a lot of inspiration from their work. I don't copy it, of course, but it gives me an idea. Like, you know, if they're in a bar, what if they did this, this, and this?
Right.
That's where I do it.
Have you always been into science fiction, or is this something that's fairly now you're in it and really
I've
like
been
it?
In science. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that now that you're in it and you really like it and find that you like writing it.
I do. My science fiction started when we first moved to Florida when I was six, and the landlord's kid gave me, his name was Mitch, gave me a copy of short story sci-fi short stories.
Well, that's a mouthful.
And Revenge from Mars is actually sort of loosely based on that, the first story that I read, because it captured my imagination from then until now. And it was the story of tourists on Mars who found a large cache of weapons, and then they killed themselves in their greed. That's what that story went by. Mm. And I kind of spun it a little differently.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite writer and why?
My favorite writer, I have a couple. I would say probably either Alan Dean Foster or Robert Heinlein, most likely Robert Heinlein.
Okay.
And the reason is because he's a master.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it. I wish I could write that well.
Back in, a couple months back, Bobby Jean was actually interviewing me.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me the same question, and my answer was, me.
You're right.
Yes.
I could say me, but I'm not really a boastful kind of person. I write stories because I love to tell a good story. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason I write. It's not about the money, and it's not about the exposure, and not about any of that. It's about me telling a good story and people enjoying it. That's what it's about for me.
Be honest, you'd love it if you hit it big.
Oh yeah, sorry, I'm not going to say I wouldn't love it. Sure, I would, and I hope that I do. But it's not. If I don't, then you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find dialogue difficult or easy to write? I find it's really easy for me. Some other authors deplore writing dialogue because it's hard to make it natural sounding. No one speaks perfect eighth grade English, and me, I couldn't diagram a sentence if you paid me.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that dialogue for me at first was very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did it enough to where I developed my characters enough where they can talk in my head
mm-hmm.
to each other, and then I just write down what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I'm writing down, they say things that are are not, they're a complete left turn. Mm-hmm. And that's why, that's where the crazy islands come from.
But that's how people talk.
It is, yes, it is.
I mean, people take turns in conversations all the time.
Or they talk mm-hmm. over one another.
Or they talk like we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm, exactly, yes. And when I first put Revenge from Mars out there, I sent it to, I didn't know it was one of those pay publishers at first, and they loved the manuscript, they wanted to publish it, and they said, but the only thing is you probably should work on your dialogue. And I was like, oh my God, I got to work on the dialogue. And I did, and the more I did it, the easier it became.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. If your characters are really real, they have to have a way of talking that is just theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. They do.
They do.
And my characters to me are I mean, you know, I there's when I deliver my wife and I own a flower shop, so I do a lot of flower deliveries in the afternoon. I do a lot of driving around, and as I'm driving around, I'm talking to my characters in my head. Because I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get home, they tell me again, and I write it down.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Todd, if not a writer, what?
Well, you know, I've had many jobs in my life. My first job was picking green oranges off orange trees. Well, we live in Florida, of course. I've been a mullet fisherman. I've been... I started my own orange juice business when I was 10. I worked for Bell South as an information operator for 15 years, and I did 3 million calls in my career. And when they closed that office in Fort Pierce, that's when I had enough seniority to get a year's worth of pay, so I went ahead and went to culinary school while I had the money. And I tried the chef thing. I ended up working at the Breakers in Palm Beach, which is a five-star resort, and then I had a car accident, and I hurt my right hand so that I couldn't use my knife. And right at that time is when the housing market crashed, and the restaurants were going out of business around here left and right. I mean, they'd be in business one day and be out of business the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been delivering flowers for 20 years, and other than that, it's just kind of, I work where the work is at, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you have, what advice do you have for authors? What would you, a couple of nuggets.
Oh, sure. The first thing that I would say to an author is, write what you love. Don't worry about the money, don't worry about the fame, don't worry about if it'll sell. Write what you love. And second is, don't give up, because not everybody's going to like your writing. That's just a fact. They're not going to. And you need to develop a thick skin early if you want to continue writing, because I know how badly, I had several friends of mine drop out because they got a couple bad reviews and like, you know what, I don't need this crap. I'm going to go back to what I was doing before.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. But like I said, I have a desire to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell it really well, and apparently I do, so that's why I write. And I would love to be, one of the other reasons that I write is because the person that's going to lead the team to Mars is either in middle school or high school right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if my book, not that it would, I mean, I wish it would, but if my book were to influence that person into that position, like the way that first science fiction story hit me, then what? My job is done.
Or you could be influencing another writer, you know.
I'm thinking about
Ed Ertelak, that's been a guest on our show,
right,
and was so influenced by
right.
what he was reading,
right.
you know, as a youngster. And mm-hmm. absolutely, I think having the power of what's in the written word, and that's really why we celebrate it on this show, is that mm-hmm. power of the written word and how it can impact your subconscious and your conscience and propel you to follow a dream, or to give you a dream, or to mm-hmm. suggest a dream. That's mm-hmm. so powerful in our lives, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
When I used to write ghost stories for my grandmother when I was 5 and 6 and 7 years old. But the problem is because I'm dyslexic and ADHD, no one could read them but me. So it was not until Bill Gates invented the personal computer word program that I could actually write something that anyone else could read.
And isn't that astounding? I mean, that's just astounding. Think of how many people have has opened doors to so many people in so many ways.
Well, my brother is dyslexic.
Yeah.
We used to have to tell him to turn watch or turn no watch.
Ah, got it. Yeah.
Yeah, Wally, turn watch.
Turn watch right and left hand.
Yeah. What are you currently working on, Todd?
Right now, I'm working on a book called it's a collection of short stories and poetry. It's called The Ravings of a Bipolar Mind. And the current short story I'm working on is something called Captain Tom's Time Travel Safaris. Everything in this particular issue has to do with time travel.
Oh, so if you were traveling back in time, where would be the first place you'd want to go, time and place you'd want to go?
Well, I've always wanted to go back to, like, say, 650 BC, something like that, and to Florida back when it was really, really wild. I mean, it's wild after, of course, too, but before it had been touched by the Europeans. Mm-hmm. You know, just to catch record bass and to see the really big gators and catch some really big saltwater fish, you know, that sort of thing. Because the fishing today in Florida has declined so much since when I was a kid that they're catching snappers on the bridge now that are 6 or 8 inches long, and they're keeping them. Mm-hmm. And they finally had to put a limit on them because they're almost gone. One of the most famous fishing spots in Florida was a place called Little Jim Bridge in Fort Pierce, Florida. You can fish all day there now and maybe catch one or two keepers. And mm-hmm. used to be it was maybe five minute job to catch dinner.
Mm.
So that I would always love to, you know, to visit some place that is pristine and unchanged and all that sort of thing. As for a particular time period, I don't know. I would like to go visit the Old West, but I'm not quite sure about the sanitation and you know that sort of thing and what they eat and all that.
I don't think I really fit in there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think we romanticize it way too much.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah,
exactly. The way you romanticize it is not the way it was. I can assure you.
Do you like being interviewed?
I do. Yes.
Because?
I do. Because, I don't know, gives me a chance to talk to people I don't know.
There you go.
There you go.
Now you're
good answer.
We have thousands of listeners out there. Well, at least. They have amassed.
They should call in.
Yeah, they should call in. You're right.
A lot of people don't like calling into radio shows.
So. Yeah, I understand that, too. And it's daunting to say the least, because you know, because you might be on the air and then all of a sudden you got all that stress from being on the air. And yeah, I get it. I do, totally. Sure.
Exactly. Hey, do you have any rituals that you use when you're writing?
Rituals that I use when I'm writing,
like, you know,
not really. I like to be in a what I call a favorite place, and one of my favorite places is along the Kissimmee River in Florida. And there's a stand of oak trees, and there are live oaks that are at least 500 years old piece. That they're amazingly huge and old, and it is such a peaceful place. I mean, the river coming by, and there's not a lot of boat traffic, so that doesn't bother you. And there's no housing out there, so you know there's no light pollution. When you see the sky at night, it's full of stars.
Uh-huh.
And or I like to ride on my back porch, and that because that's comfortable. But I live on the edge of a what's known as a drainage canal, and when I say that it's kind of a canal, it's probably 50 feet across and 50 feet deep, and it's full of it was full of until they started to get down again, full of wild birds and turtles and fish and crickets and frogs and all that sort of thing, and that sound they make at night just soothes me, and I can just write better than other times.
You want to give us your contact information then, so people will know how to get a hold of you if they want to?
Sure. I have a fan page on Facebook. It's T.W. Embry at Facebook, I think is what they call it. I have a website that I'm not on a whole lot with because, I kind of ran out of time. That's twembry.com. My book information is either on Smashwords or on Amazon. The Revenge from Mars is not in print at the moment because I switched from one publisher to the other, and they have to change the cover a little bit and that sort of things, and that's being done. So it shouldn't be much longer before it comes out. The other book that I have on Amazon is Alien Manifesto. I have a short story in the Steps from Time anthology and a Halloween one, too, but I don't remember the name of that one. That was a fun one to write.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, look, we've enjoyed having you on with us.
Well, I've had a great time being here.
Good, good. And email address real quick.
My email address is JEDI43@gmail.com.
This has been delightful, Todd, and I look forward to reading Alien Manifesto. I just wasn't able to get to it in time for tonight, but now that I've finished Revenge from Mars, I'm ready for book two.
If you like the twists and turns in Revenge from Mars, then you better buckle your seatbelt, honey, because it's coming more.
Oh, yeah. I thought that I really had it all figured out until you introduced the old one.
No one has seen that twist coming. I've talked to many people that have read the book, none of them have seen that twist coming.
Yeah. So you had me from page one all the way to the end.
That's good. That was my intention. I know that Revenge from Mars has a slow part there about when it starts talking about the political sort of thing on Earth, and it gets a little tiresome, I think, or so I've been told. But once you get past that, then it's just a roller coaster ride all the way to the end.
It's just great storytelling. Yep.
I was kind of interested in the first part of the book is who you were so mad at. That's pretty angry.
Well, actually, Revenge from Mars was written. My father died in a nursing home of Alzheimer's.
Ah.
And that's who I was angry at.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And in Alien Manifesto, I was caregiving for my mother, who at 18 months she battled with cancer, and I spent 18 months as her caregiver, and I wrote a lot of Alien Manifesto there. So a lot of it is some of it's very dark, especially the Evil Queen, that sort of thing, because I've always been told that you should write where the pain is. Well, I don't like writing where the pain is because it's dark. I like telling a good story, not a dark story.
Yeah. Gotcha, yeah. Gotcha. Well, we're going to have to get off the air. Thanks for coming on with us and visiting with us for this hour. It's been a real fun time.
Yeah.
And good luck with your writing, and keep in touch with us, huh?
We'll post the podcast link later tonight on your Facebook page.
Yep, and you'll be able to go to the podcast right when we get off the air. Yep. So,
all right, that's cool. Thank you, folks.
Thank you again,
Todd.
Thank
you, Todd.
All right, have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Interesting guy.
Hey, that was great. I meant to say, may the force be with you.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Todd, if you're still listening.
and fight on and write on. But
fight on and write on.
But, you know. So, again, next week at the concert series is whom?
Dave Stamey. But those tickets are gone, so you want to be right here and listening to Candace and Penny, the horse sluts.
The horse sluts. Me and Russ are going to have a ball with them. I love having Russ here anyway because he's a lot of fun.
Oh, you'll have a great time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But we always miss you.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And then the following week, we have the schedule here.
I'm so glad you have it in front of you because I seem to be missing that piece.
I do. The weekend of September 3rd, the week of September 3rd, we have Charlotte Law, is a fascinating, fascinating woman. TV host. I mean, she's been everywhere. And she's going to be on with us. And then we have John Biggs, who has written a couple books that appear to be pretty good. I've started one of them. And and the following week, I'm only going to go up to the 17th because everybody's going to be listening to that. That's Peter Schirraco.
Oh, yes. We will look forward to having Peter here, yes.
Yes. He is Texas Jack for the movie Tombstone. He has Caravan West Productions. He's constantly working on movies. And you'll never find Peter without a flannel shirt, pair of shorts, and a cigar stuffed in his mouth.
And a suede buckskin jacket.
And a suede buckskin jacket.
And he has written nonfiction, really great nonfiction books, and a couple kids' books.
He did the Buffalo Bill Cody show, the one-man show. His books, Tombstone, Guns and Gear.
Right.
And he's got some other
Fringe
CDs
of Hollywood,
out there. Yeah.
And he's been talking heads on a variety of Western History Channel programs. So,
in the immortal words of C. Courtney Joyner,
Fight on.
And right on. And we're out of here. Have a great, great week. We'll be with you again next Thursday night. Enjoy your weekend.